Hello and welcome to an Inside College Hockey podcast as we approach the end of the season. I'm Joe Gladyszewski, podcast host, joined by a full complement of Inch writers and editors as we record this on February 27th, 2007. First of all, Inch editor and columnist Mike Eidelbus, senior writer out of the WCHA and Invergirl Fights Minnesota, Jess Myers, and from Hockey East and the University of Massachusetts Amherst, Jeff Howe.
Joe, did you get those business cards that say podcast host on them? That's long overdue.
They're in the mail.
Okay. Good to know. We'll have them for the playoffs.
He has vanity license plates on his car that say that.
Inch PCAST.
PCAST HST.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
It's a real bummer fitting those on Saskatchewan license plates.
So everybody down at the DMV listens in every week.
Yeah, I'd like to say hi to Mary and Agnes and Ethel down there.
Patty and Selma.
Doing a great job administering those permit exams.
Mary, Agnes, and Ethel, were you at the DMV or like a quilting bee?
It's both.
Oh.
Multitasking.
There you go.
Multitasking. Yeah. Let's start out with discussion of the St. Cloud State Huskies. The most powerful performance last weekend with a sweep in a home-and-home series against the Minnesota Golden Gophers. And, Bus, you saw a lot of that. I heard some of it. and St. Cloud really very, very strong in Friday night's opener at the National Hockey Center in front of a boisterous crowd.
No question. And I was really impressed with the way they came out and played on Friday and just had a lot of energy. And granted, I think that they were feeding off that crowd a lot, which for people who were there, they don't need any explanation. But for the people that, if you watched it on TV like I did, really, St. Cloud is probably one of the underrated experiences in college hockey from a fan standpoint. I mean, it's a loud building, a little rowdy, little they work blue, let's put it that way. it was a great scene, and you can really tell that St. Cloud fed off that and really got to the Gophers early on Friday and didn't let them up. And, Gepfert was good, but I was just impressed with, I thought they played with a lot of poise, and they do have some seniors on that roster, but they're still a fairly young team, especially when you look at their scorers like Lash and Nodal, and I guess Gordon's a junior now, but I just thought that they really dictated the flow of the game early, and Minnesota, at least Friday night, didn't look like they just never got in sync.
Jess, your thoughts on the Huskies?
Well, you know, it's interesting you talk about Friday night's game, and I attended Saturday night's game, which was an equally impressive performance, I would say, by the Huskies, but a very different performance. Got outshot by a wide margin through two periods. At one point in the second period, you know, St. Cloud's in Minnesota's building. They're down 3-1. The shots I looked were Minnesota with 24, Huskies with 7. And you're thinking, okay, this series is going to be a split. I mean, there's just, you know, Minnesota's doing what you were used to them doing in their home building, which is completely dominating the game. You know, Minnesota's crowd, although not as loud and not as intimidating as St. Cloud's crowd, is loud, you know, and they were into the game. And Minnesota, for the most part, throughout the game, shut down those guys that you mentioned, Mike. I mean, Nodal had nothing, Gordon had nothing, Lash had nothing after having two goals and an assist on Friday. They completely shut down Lash. And the guys who got it done, which amazed me, the guys who kind of turned it around and spurred, you know, a late goal by Marty Miele, who's a fourth-line left wing. He's a junior. He's got now 7 career goals. And, you know, he makes it 3-2, and then they come out in the third period and just kind of have their way with Minnesota and control the game. And, again, it's a guy named Gary Hausman, fourth-line center, who's a senior, and I think now he has 13 career goals after that game. So it wasn't the usual suspects. And, you know, sometimes a team sweeps, and it's they sweep in similar games. I mean, I'm thinking in Minnesota 2 weeks ago when they went into Colorado College, won 3-0, or three, excuse me, they won 3-2 both nights, both very similar games. And you think, yeah, it's an impressive sweep, but it was kind of the same thing. I guess that's what impressed me most about what St. Cloud did last weekend was, you know, winning big in their own building when they controlled start to finish, and then, you know, a much more, I would say, gutty performance to come from behind in somebody else's building when you're getting dominated and really kind of send an exclamation point that, that you know, we're not going to fold in the face of some pretty serious adversity.
One of the things that impressed me about the Huskies was that they scored 10 goals on the weekend. One, of course, was an empty netter. But the line of Andreas Nodal, Nate Day, and Andrew Gordon had 0 points in those two games out of 9 goals.
Yeah.
That's a pretty impressive statement for the rest of the St. Cloud State lineup and the fact that, as you guys mentioned, it's not a team you can take one line away from and really control play against them.
You know, Gladys, just to add on to that, you kind of separated the empty net goal out of that equation, but Jess, you were at the game Saturday, and from what it looked like on TV, that the it looked almost like the empty net goal kind of captured the weekend in a nutshell. At least on TV, it looked like when St. Cloud got that empty netter on Saturday, it looked like the St. Cloud guy went and he was kind of I guess by the almost at the top of the faceoff circle to the right of Bobby Gepfert, the goalie. And he poked the puck out past the guy, the Minnesota guy at the point. And the Minnesota guy just kind of turned around and looked at the puck and watched it go out of the zone. And meanwhile, the guy from St. Cloud, that the defenseman that poked it free, I think his name's Matt Stevenson.
Matt Stevenson.
Hustled down to the other end, went past the Minnesota guy. I think it was actually Alex Goligoski at the point who more or less just stood there and watched the puck go out of the zone. Meanwhile, Stevenson's hustling down to the other end. He beats the other Minnesota guy racing for the puck and kind of lunges and jabs it into the goal for the empty netter. I mean, that to me kind of put a nice bow on the weekend as far as the kind of effort that St. Cloud came with as opposed to the kind of effort that that Minnesota came with.
Well, I would remind people too that St. Cloud was killing a penalty at that time. 18:16 left. Casey Borer gets a tripping penalty when you're up by one goal in somebody else's building. I mean, you know, talk about a flair for the dramatic. So, you know, separate out the empty net goal, I guess, makes sense. But it was a very critical play at that juncture in the game to get another goal up on the board and kind of put that final nail in any hopes Minnesota had of coming back and winning that game.
Another WCHA series of note last weekend was a split between North Dakota and Denver. Those games were played at Magnus Arena. In Denver, the Saturday game, the second game of that series, was a 3-0 North Dakota win, and guess who? Ryan Duncan was at it again for North Dakota. This kid is absolutely on fire, kind of has overcome some publicity barriers. And is now right in the middle of any Hobie conversation. Duncan has 25 points in North Dakota's last 12 games. In those 12 games, the Fighting Sioux are 8-1-3, and he has 19 points in North Dakota's last 8 games. This kid is absolutely on fire, and what I meant by publicity barriers were, A team that struggled through the middle portion of the season, and B, not having the name recognition of some of his teammates to really stand out as a, you know, bona fide offensive individual superstar, that a barrier that guys probably like Nate Gerby and TJ Hensick didn't have to face. What's going on with Ryan Duncan, and how good is this guy?
You want me to comment on that one?
Of course. You're our WCHA writer.
No, I absolutely agree with you. And you talk about publicity barriers. I'm as guilty as anybody. In the preseason, all anybody talked about, you know, myself included, was TJ Oshie, Jonathan Taves, and whoever happens to be on that line with them. And the guy who happens to be on that line with him, as you mentioned. I mean, his release is the thing that really blows me away. His ability to take the puck below the faceoff circles, and he's got a knack, and I've seen him do this. He did it against Denver last weekend. I saw him do it against Minnesota a couple weeks ago. He's got this knack for finding the gap behind the goalie, you know, between the goalie's back and the post, essentially. And it's just, I haven't seen that ability before to shoot high with that much accuracy behind the goalie's shoulders. Very good game on Friday night. They in Denver goes to overtime. Denver, you could see the desperation a little bit. I mean, that was a team that really, really needed a win, a real gutty win. You know, guys like Jeff Pocovich and some of those, you know, sizable guys for Denver really made the difference in getting that game to overtime, you know, overcoming a deficit, you know, kind of a goofy play in overtime off a face-off shot from the point gets tipped in front and is passed Philippe Lamoureux before he knows what's happening, and Denver gets a win. The other thing I'll say about North Dakota, Lamoureux on Saturday night gets his third shutout, I think, in the last eight games. You don't mention him routinely among, you know, the big-name goaltenders in the WCHA, the Brian Elliotts and the Bobby Gepferts and, you know, some of those people. But the way Lamoureux has been playing between the pipes, especially recently, that's yet another reason that I don't think anybody wants to have anything to do with North Dakota in the playoffs.
I think you're probably right about that. But on the flip side, and if I'm a North Dakota fan and I want to be pessimistic, or see things.
They don't ever do that.
No. They always wear.
Their thing.
They always wear the rose-colored
glasses. They're too busy being peeved.
being nettlesome. Is that, you know, Duncan and Oshie and Taves have been, you know, since all three of those guys have been on the line here lately, they've been outstanding. But they've also kind of been it as far as producing offense.
Yeah.
So, you know, coming into this the home stretch here, you know, while it's nice to see these guys producing, and obviously Duncan's been fantastic, and Oshie and Taves have played a lot better during the second half of the season. You know, you look at the box score from Saturday night's game, and Friday night's game, where the Denver overtime win. And you look at North Dakota, and it's Duncan 1-2-3, Taves 1-2-3, Oshie 1-2-3, and then everybody else has got zeros. So, I mean, are they getting to be a little bit one-dimensional? I don't know.
Well, you look certainly beyond appears that line. That you look beyond that line in their lineup, and I mean, you're absolutely right. You're going to need somebody to step up. You know, on the second line, they've put Chris Porter and Matt Watkins and Brad Miller together. With varying success at certain points over the season. You know, Brad Miller is a very interesting story and has had, you know, more than 20 points this year and is putting together a nice run for a guy, you know, that obviously wasn't that heralded. He played in the USHL. He's out of Alpharetta, Georgia, of all places. And, you know, I don't know that there's a direct flight from there to Grand Forks available, but somehow he found the way and is doing some nice work.
Yeah, Delta.
But yeah.
Delta.
Oh, hey, good.
That's a
good Atlanta suburb, I'm 90% certain.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is in Alpharetta, a suburb of Atlanta. So apparently he wasn't going to wait around for that Kennesaw State program any longer and just said, okay, I'll go to Grand Forks.
Good
and
call.
Kennesaw State didn't go through with the move because they couldn't keep their hometown talent in town.
Yeah, that's North Dakota kept stealing their guys.
One hand washes the other.
Anyways, to get back to the issue at hand about the Hobie and Duncan, you know, when we put together the Hobie tracker every week, you know, we kind of got hammered about having Curry on top, and I think for a while there he deserved it. I'll be honest with you, at this point in time, I'm really at a loss. I mean, if I had to pick a favorite right now, I don't think I could. I really don't think I could. I think Duncan's got to be in that mix, in the top 3 to 5 guys, but and probably Brown and from Notre Dame, and maybe I think you got to put Hensick in there as well from Michigan, and include Curry in there as well. But
and Eric Ain.
And Eric Ain from Air Force.
He's in. I mean, he's a leading scorer in the country.
Yeah, he's got, what, 60 points in that neighborhood?
Yeah, lots.
Lots. Beyond that, but, to pick a clear-cut favorite or, to even narrow the list to a top 10, I don't think I could do that. There's just no... Go ahead.
Is Gepford on your top 10 list?
Top 10?
I don't know.
Because I was thinking about, just from a WCHA standpoint today, I was thinking about postseason awards. I think I would have to give MVP, and if you go by the criteria of the guy who has meant the most to his team, I would have to give league MVP to Bobby Gepford right now. That's not to say, he is the best Hobie candidate out of the league. I would probably go with you, Gladdy, and say Duncan has got a better chance to win the Hobie right now. But as far as the guy who has meant the most to his team, I think it's Bobby Gepford in my mind.
Yeah, I think that you run into that with a lot of different leagues. I mean, who's the best player, who's the most outstanding player, and who's the most important player? Yeah. Kyle Rank of St. Lawrence might not be one of the top 10 forwards, skill-wise, talent-wise, pro potential-wise, in the ECAC Hockey League, but he's played the best, and he's meant the most to St. Lawrence's success. I don't think, if you go back to the old analogy that if ECAC Hockey League coaches were picking a fantasy team and choosing guys that they would have on their team, there's a bunch of forwards they'd rather have. But this season and this Saints team, there's no other forward that Joe Marsh would rather have than Kyle Rank. And that goes on everywhere. You got to weigh the merits of what does a guy like Santarelli mean to Northern Michigan? And is he really, would people take him with the Hensicks and Parses and Nate Davises of the world? I doubt it. So, I don't know. You've got all those things, and that's why they pay us the big bucks, Jess, to make these decisions.
Well, but it gets to the point where this race, this season, and I don't remember this in years past, and maybe it's just because we scrutinize these things so much more intensely at this point in time, is that it's almost like every weekend, based on the results of what happened, over the past two games or whatever, that we throw in a candidate based on what happened. Now Gepford's name comes up because he puts up, has a couple of nice back-to-back starts against Minnesota. And, is that enough to catapult him into, a top three or a top five? I don't know. It just seems also instantaneous, whereas we kind of lose sight of a little bit of the long term, I think.
Well, you've got it, yeah, and that's what we talked about this week in determining the inch power rankings. If you looked at the last 48 hours, St. Cloud State was the number one team in the country.
Right.
If you looked at the last 48 days, Notre Dame was.
Right.
And if you look at those kinds of stats in individual criteria, David Brown and John Curry are pretty even.
Mm-hmm.
But Ryan Duncan's far ahead of them. I mean, it's hard to compare forwards and goaltenders. And T.J. Hensick is about about 60% of what Duncan's done. Hensick, and we just used 7 weeks kind of off of mid-January date, in 14 games, Hensick had 20 points. And in 12 games, Duncan had 25 points. And Duncan's team had a better record in those games. But remarkably, also working off that same date, Bus, David Brown is 9-2-2 with 3 shutouts. And John Curry is 9-2-2 with 4 shutouts.
Hmm.
Curry's save percentage is about a hundredth percent higher, which is the second column. It's 940 to 929.
Mm-hmm.
Curry's, making that many more saves. But also in that stretch, Curry was yanked from one game against the University of Massachusetts Amherst Minutemen.
Well, he just couldn't handle that pressure.
Well, I was trying to see if Rook was still there or he had a mouthful of cake.
Sorry, I've been over here
he's
busy making fun of the interns for the last few minutes.
Making fun of the interns?
Yeah, you know, we're playing a little game over here.
I bet. I bet you are.
is our intern's name Shiloh? I'm just wondering.
Shiloh?
What does that even mean?
I don't even
we've
know.
We've got a great game of PS3 going over here.
Nice.
Fantastic.
Yeah, thanks for
Well,
thanks
if you
for,
were listening at all.
Thanks
we,
for your undivided attention.
And thanks for your contributions on the status of St. Cloud State's lineup depth. I know it's something you follow very closely.
I wanted to really throw my two cents in there, but I mean, you guys kept interrupting me, so I figured we'll let the podcast deterioration.
Bobby Gephardt used to kind of sound like you, Rook, but that's gone away. He's lived in central Minnesota for 2 years now.
Yeah. Well, one of the things we talked about was most important. I'll recap this for you.
Last week on Inside College Hockey Podcast.
You know, just because you're playing Mike Tyson's Punch Out with Ray Emery or something like that.
Mike
I don't
know.
The debate between most outstanding player and most important player. You've got a tough call there in Hockey East between Trevor Smith and Nate Gerby, especially based on Smith's start and Gerby's emergence lately.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think so, definitely. And I think Gerby would be more important to his team lately just because, you know, the way he's picked up the first line, he's also made Brian Boyle and Brock Bradford a whole lot better around him. And, you know, really since, I'd say about a week and a half, 2 weeks before the Beanpot started, Gerby really started to get on a roll. And, I mean, he's been dominating at times. And when that first line is clicking, which it has been for, you know, nearly two consecutive months now, they're as dominant as either of UNH's top two lines, which, and, you know, they've single-handedly beat some teams. I mean, their first line pretty much beat Maine by themselves a couple weeks ago. And, you know, Trevor Smith got off to that amazing start, and he's still playing great hockey. His numbers aren't, you know, his numbers haven't stayed up to par with where they were in the first half. But, I mean, he's still, you know, been an amazing player. But the thing is, if Trevor Smith doesn't play well, there are still, you know, 5 to 7 amazing forwards in their top three lines, you know, providing they're all there, you know, based on their injury problems the last, you know, this season. But, you know, other guys can pick up the slack. You know, BC has some talented forwards, but they don't. I don't think they have the depth at forward the way the UNH has. So, you know, Gerby is almost kind of like Schneider was last year, albeit they play a completely different position and their bearing on the team is a little different. But with the way Gerby has played lately, he's really picked the Eagles up, I mean, as a whole. And that's been, I mean, just as important because their defense is not where it was at last year, this year. So, I mean, the fact that they can score almost at will on that first line is just as valuable as you know, he's made himself just as valuable as any player in the league.
We've got 6 Hockey East teams in the Inch Power Rankings. Who's the team that's most likely to crumble and who's the team that's most likely to surprise taking New Hampshire out of that equation?
Well, in the crumble part, I mean, after their weekend against Providence, they're right up in the mix. I mean, they got outplayed by Providence 2 nights. They just happened to win one of those games. But, you know, I'd be worried if I were a Maine fan right now because Ben Bishop's injury is starting to sound a whole lot more serious than originally thought. I mean, this talk up there that his groin might be torn. And Dave Wilson might actually be in net 1, if not 2 nights this weekend in Amherst. You know, that's the preliminary talk of the week. I don't know how much stock you want to put into that. But if I'm a Maine fan and I know that, you know, my starting goalie in Ben Bishop might not be able to even come back, on top of the fact that, you know, they just got swept at BC, I mean, I'm a little worried about where the Black Bears can go or, you know, what kind of a run they can get on in the tournament here. And if they flail out in the first round, I really think they're a bubble team to get into the tournament, just because, you know, they have struggled a lot of times this season. I think a team that could surprise some people is, I mean, still Northeastern and still UMass, although, you know, UMass could still end up as the 4 seed or even the 3 seed in the playoffs if things fall their way and they sweep Maine. But I don't know how much of a surprise that would be if they ended up winning a couple of games at home and then maybe won a semifinal. I guess in the grand scheme of things, it would be a surprise. But, I mean, even...
I would be surprised.
Yeah, I mean, in the grand scale of college hockey, if UMass got out of the first round, it would be a relative surprise, I guess. If they won in the semifinals, it would be a huge surprise. Hockey East is so wide open. I've been saying for a few weeks now that I think any one of the top 7 teams could make some noise in the first round in advance. But after seeing Providence whip UNH a couple times this weekend, and a strong likelihood that Providence is going to see UNH in the first round of the playoffs, now I wouldn't be surprised if, I mean, who wins? You know, it's just... The field is so wide open that it's almost like it's almost impossible to predict, you know, who the gate crasher could be, because it, you know, legitimately could be any single team in that league. And even, you know, Vermont is one of those teams that at times has looked absolutely dominant, and, you know, other times, and I'd say a little more often than, you know, looking dominant, Vermont has been a team that's been rolled over a few times. So, I mean, there hasn't been a team. I mean, I guess BU has been the most consistent team over the last 2 months, and, you know, maybe they are the preliminary favorite to win the Hockey East tournament, but it's so wide open this year right now that I really don't know.
And in action earlier tonight, Boston University recorded their 24th tie of the season.
they do.
Getting to a 2-2 tie against Hockey East State.
They can tie with the best of them.
They played a friendly with Arsenal. And
Jack Parker, I think, had the one of the lines of the year, although that's not a surprise. But even 2 months ago when they were tying, you know, almost every single night, it seemed, Parker sat down at a press conference, I think after a 2-2 or a 3-3 tie with UMass. And, you know, without anybody even asking a question, Parker sits down and says, "We don't have a sister. I don't know why we keep kissing her."
I think the line of the year comes from Dick Umiley last week when he said, "We played like jerks."
That was great.
We played like jerks. That's outstanding. One thing that I wanted to touch on with regard to the Hockey East race is something that really intrigues me is kind of what's boiling down in those 4, 5, and 6 spots where you've got, you know, Maine, UMass, Vermont, and, you know, I guess you kind of concede that 1, 2, and 3 is going to end up UNH, BU, BC. I mean, how pressure-packed are these next 2, 3 weeks for those, or, you know, 2 weeks especially
two
for
weeks.
those three teams? You know, not only are they jockeying for position in the conference, but, you know, basically their entire postseason fate really hangs in the balance of the next 2 weeks, especially when you look at the potential of Maine and UMass having to play 4 times in the next 2 weeks, or, you know, these teams are so tightly matched.
What they have to me, Bus, is opportunity.
Right.
They
exactly.
know that no matter what happened, great, you know, for Maine early in the season, no matter what happened poorly, they don't control their own destiny. They can play themselves into a great spot in the Hockey East tournament and into the NCAA tournament. And that, to me, is exciting, because if you had a bad loss to a Merrimack or a Lowell or whoever it might have been in November or December, or if you're a team like Maine that went off to such a hot start and then kind of staggered, everything, the slate is clear. You can go, and you can play, and you can win and take care of everything you need to take care of. I love that.
Yes.
It's going to be, I mean, I think there are two teams that are automatic. BU and UNH are automatic, I think, to get into the tournament. I think BC is about as close to automatic as there is. And if a team, I mean, UMass needs to make a serious run in the tournament to get any consideration for the NCAAs. But I think, you know, if Maine flails out and doesn't make it to the Garden for the semifinals, or Vermont does the same, then neither one of those teams is really locked in right now. But the big thing this weekend is, you know, everybody's, you know, talking about, oh, Maine, UMass, you know, the winner of this series is going to get home ice in the four seed. Well, everybody's kind of forgetting about the fact that Vermont is playing at home twice against Lowell. So there's a chance that if Maine or UMass doesn't sweep this series, which is a solid possibility, that Vermont, which is only 1 point behind those teams, is odds are, I mean, if I were a better and there were odds on college hockey, I would think Vermont's going to take 4 points against Lowell this weekend. So Vermont could absolutely catapult into the fourth spot and play, I guess, the winner of the UMass-UMaine series in the first round of the playoffs.
I'll give you a price on that, Rook. We'll talk after the podcast.
You know, one thing...
You want some action? We got action.
We don't endorse gambling, but we do profit from it.
We don't endorse gambling. It endorses us.
Exactly. You know, one thing about Maine, I think that they can still, you know, let's say they split and maybe don't get to the, lose out in the first round of the hockey's playoffs. Do you think that they're still in pretty good shape just because they beat Minnesota and they also beat North Dakota early on? Those are some significant wins in the eyes of the selection committee. And
yeah,
I think that gives them a huge advantage over those other two teams. So even if they do, if they lose in the first round, I think that might give them enough juice to overcome a upset in the first round.
I think out of those three teams, Maine has as much room for error as any of those three teams. I mean, theoretically, I guess Maine could lose four straight games and still find its way into the NCAA tournament, where that won't happen, obviously, for Vermont and UMass. UMaine's out-of-conference schedule and their points that they've gotten out-of-conference are definitely big for them, and Vermont has a few big wins too. UMass has a couple, but you know, UMass also has two losses to Merrimack, a loss to Lowell, and a couple other shady losses earlier this season. So, I mean, UMass pretty much needs to, I'd say, get 3 or 4 points against Maine, win the first round, and then probably win a semifinal game in order to even get consideration. If not, win the Hockey East tournament outright just to get the automatic.
Maine is 7-0-1, and there are 8 non-league games this year.
That's getting it done.
Yes, it is. Hard to do better than that.
And like you noticed, it was, you know, coming into St. Paul, playing Minnesota in front of a very partisan crowd, going to Grand Forks, you know, playing North Dakota twice early in the season, and as you said, Bus, you know, pretty notable wins early on.
You know, and I'm going to say
they won the Florida tournament also.
They did win the Florida tournament too, and you know, I'm going to say, I've probably said this a million times, and I'll say it again now. Every time we're kind of getting ready to, or we kind of have question marks regarding Maine, they do something to prove us wrong. And, you know, they'll go out and win twice this weekend, and they'll go out and, you know, get to the final of the Hockey East tournament or something like that, play really well for the next 3-4 weeks. It's just, there's something about that team where, you know, they could come into Amherst this weekend with the bus on fire and still, you know, win a couple games, 5-1 and 6-1, and like nothing ever happened. I mean, they just seem to have that magic where they can, you know, rally from adverse situations and play their best when they're in tough spots. I don't know what it is about them, but they've done it time and again.
What team would you compare that to out west? Is that kind of a North Dakota thing? If they leave you scratching your head and then they always come through?
Were their buses on fire?
No. Just the fact that...
No, I would absolutely compare that to North Dakota. You know, especially when you look at a season like this one where there were times in October and November where they were just confoundingly inconsistent and not very good, but, you know, somehow you still kind of have a feeling here they come again. And since Christmas, they've done that. You know, same thing last year. They were a middle of the pack to pretty good team throughout the season last year. Not fabulous, you know, not horrible. And then all of a sudden, bang, they win the WCHA tournament and they get to the Frozen Four. Granted, last year they had the advantage of playing a regional in their own building, but I would definitely compare North Dakota to Maine in that regard.
Speaking of a bus catching on fire, I'm just going to go off on a little tangent here. I don't remember if it was last season or the season before that, but UMass was coming back from a road trip. I don't remember where, but the wheels, it may have been one wheel or a couple wheels, but the wheels literally fell off of their bus when they were en route back to UMass. And, you know, luckily for them, you know, Paul Fenton, PJ's father, was back, you know, driving behind them, and he ended up running his personal caravan, you know, to and from the campus to help the kids out. But, yeah, the wheels have fallen off in Amherst before on a bus, so maybe it will happen to me.
It happened in East, it's happened in East Lansing a few times over the past 3 weeks.
The wheels falling off?
Oh, I think the transmission dropped out last week.
When the Wheels Come Off,
yes.
The motivational book. Oh, self-help, you know, that kind of thing. No, it's about a bike. Anybody remember those old Holiday Inn commercials with the guy who was like living at home, he always wanted internet and free continental breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
The parents said. Yeah.
Will Drew Stanton write the foreword to that book about his performance against Notre Dame?
Whoa.
Wow. There's your tangent.
Kids, what were the kids doing, Bus?
What's that?
What were the kids doing?
What kids?
And what were the coaches doing?
The kids are playing their tail off, and the coaches are screwing it up.
Thank you.
There we go.
Thank you. Thank you.
The kids were playing their tails off.
I'm certain that Drew Stanton suffered a concussion in that game. There's nothing else you can take from it.
Hey, he lit it up at the combine.
He's having a great combine week.
That routinely happens to us during the podcast, this mid-game concussion.
He probably suffered a concussion trying to listen to John L.
John L's headbutting and kissing people. Smacking himself in the face.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
Charlie Weiss punched Drew Stanton, and then...
Charlie Weiss got punched by Drew Stanton.
No, I think it was Matt Tranet, wasn't it?
It was nobody. It was a figment of his imagination.
It was a phantom. It was like...
from his botched surgeries.
Sonny Liston. Hey, a man almost died in those surgeries.
He almost died before the surgeries, too.
He did?
Well, I'm sure his physician doesn't let him come in for his physical, tip in the scales, whatever he is.
He's a big man.
Kind of, you're doomed if you do, and you're doomed if you don't.
Yeah.
I think we
just got an email. It says, Dear Inch Podcast, the kettle is black. Sincerely, Pot.
Rook's thin.
He's and then yeah, he's reedy.
Rook is not in my weight class.
You know. No, he'd have to wrestle up.
Once he's done with the interns.
You know, that's funny because we brought up that intern thing it was 2 weeks ago now?
A couple weeks.
And we actually got an email from somebody that would love to be our intern.
We'll look into that.
Doesn't tell you all you need to know about the job market right there.
We are major players in the college hockey scene.
Yeah.
We carry clout.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are.
That's why people get mad at us, because they believe what we're saying.
like etching.
And they get mad at John Curry for no reason.
Yeah, that's one of the more baffling things. People really...
Isn't it ironic that if Boston College fans are mad at John Curry for his alleged awkwardness and clumsiness and overwhelming success, that they used to cheer Scott Clemenson's name at the starting lineups every night?
I was going to say, you were going to make that point. It's funny that... One thing I want to say before you make that point, though, it's funny that the BC fans, and we've gotten a lot of negative mail regarding John Curry. But it's funny that, and we can only assume that most of it comes from BC fan, super fan.
Because A, it's not signed.
Yeah, because it's not signed, and it's all hate mail. Anyways, it's funny that. They, like you said, they would comment on the awkwardness or of said John Curry when they watched Matti Kaltiainen. Talk about awkward goalies. He kind of wrote the book.
True that.
Anyways, you had a point to make about...
They won. They're good college goalies. Stop the puck.
Curry and Clemenson? Was that your
point?
Yeah,
just... Well, yeah, you know, you played with a pretty decent team in front of you. You win. Are you the sole reason for the victory? Probably not. Do you get more credit than you should? Possibly. But you're doing your job. Better to get credit for winning than blame for losing. Deserved or undeserved.
Amen.
A win is a win.
Amen. I thought you
Curry, had... Curry, 94% save percentage. Since January, mid-January.
John Curry doesn't make a lot of easy saves. I mean, John Curry makes a whole lot of saves that make you sit there and scratch your head wondering, I mean, how did he do that? I mean, maybe BU does play good defense, but they've hung him out to dry a few times, and he has really risen up. I mean, he doesn't – the games that he gives up, you know, 3-4 goals or, you know, the times that he hasn't been able to make those great saves, there aren't too many flat performances in John Curry's resume this season.
You know what? Yeah, here's the argument that I make. Sure, maybe they play good team defense in front of him, and that's fine. They also don't score for him.
Exactly.
So, I mean, either way, you're facing pressure. I mean, he absolutely has to be there every night. I mean, he's not allowed. You know, Kellen Briggs can go out and have an off night maybe and give up 4 goals. And Minnesota's going to score 7, you know, or...
Regan.
Or Regan, exactly.
Yeah.
But Regan has been outstanding.
Oh, yeah, Regan's been
had a tough time this weekend.
Well,
yeah,
that's true.
Regan's been good, but, you know, if Curry gives up 3, you know, the same thing with Brian Elliott for stretches last season.
Yeah.
You know, if he gave up 3, his team wasn't going to win.
An L or a T, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think... And again, we're not, I don't know, I'm not trying to say that Curry is the best player or anything like that. I just think that, you know, you kind of have to justify, you know, his value to that team is, explain it in terms of, you know, sure, they might play good defense in front of him, but they don't score a lot for him either. That really puts a lot of the onus on his shoulders every night.
Yeah, and when... BU had the home-and-home with UNH 2 weekends ago, and the second night was at Aganis. They, you know, Curry struggled a little bit, although, I mean, it wasn't really his fault that he let up 3 goals. Maybe one of the goals was kind of soft. Actually, one of the goals he put in himself, so yeah, that on the background.
But it wasn't his fault.
But, after they fell behind 3-0, BU came back and tied it 3-3. And UNH stormed out and, you know, outshot BU in the overtime 7-0. And two or three of those overtime saves that Curry made were, you know, spectacular to earn his team, I think, their 9th tie of the season.
Yeah, they've got 9. That's amazing to me.
That's a lot of ties. I was hoping they would finish, like, 13-5-12. That would be a great record, wouldn't it?
It would. Not as great as Rensselaer's record after 15 games this year.
What were they?
If you were to read the stats on collegehockeystats.net, they list the league record first and then the overall record. And Rensselaer was 1-2-3 in the ECAC Hockey League and 4-5-6 overall. So counted right up.
Wow.
Good stuff.
This is something I saw on TV tonight while flipping through various hockey games on the little dish. Yes. Which NHL rookie has the second most goals among NHL rookies in the month of February?
Are we guessing?
Sure.
Brandon Bochenski.
Joe Pavelski.
Close. Rook, do you have a guess?
I said Kessel.
you got to play.
Stamkos?
No, he's not a rookie. He's a second year, but you're very close. That would be David
Pavelski's
Backes.
Been hurt a little
David
bit.
David Backes.
So probably a bad guess.
David Backes.
Wow. From your State Mavericks.
And the Blues.
Yeah, guys like Stempniak and Backes are going to be playing 39 minutes after all the Blues have traded.
Backes, I think, scored his seventh goal of the month tonight against the Vancouvers.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it.
Did they lose?
Hell yeah, they lost.
Huh. That's too bad. But, yeah, I thought that was a nice note.
Who's thumbs up Dave Nonis on the Smolinski and Sopel acquisitions. Way to work.
Yeah, and thumbs up to the Bruins organization for continually screwing up the organization. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I don't understand. They dealt Brad Boies. I don't understand that.
I don't understand anything they do.
Well, you know what? It's kind of funny, and I guess we'll start the pot. We'll get to NHL trade talk in the podcast deterioration, but I wanted to just wrap up with a couple of quick notes on the ECAC Hockey League. Way to work out there, Dartmouth and Princeton. Dartmouth got 4 big points at home. Clinched the Ivy League title and earned a playoff bye. They've really come on lately.
Playoffs?
As you read about.
We'll talk about playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?
Yeah, the coaches did not screw it up for Dartmouth. The kids did play their tails off.
Yes, they did.
But another place where the kids played their tails off and the coaches did not screw it up was in lovely Princeton, New Jersey. In Hobie Baker Rink, as the Princeton Tigers put an emphatic whooping on the top two teams in the ECAC Hockey League, beating Clarkson 7-1 and St. Lawrence 4-1. Most reports out of the North Country say that Friday night's win over Clarkson should have been about 20-1. That's how badly the Golden Knights were outplayed.
Jeez.
So Princeton has really come on lately. And they ended up sixth in the league, and they'll host Brown this weekend in the playoffs. And two other Ivies will also match up this weekend, and Harvard and Yale in a big rivalry series that goes on at Cambridge. The other series are Quinnipiac and Union, and Rensselaer travels to Colgate. Quinnipiac really dominated a couple of games against Union earlier this year, but...
Yeah, I remember
the Dutchmen are a team that you got to think they're better. You wouldn't expect that team to play out a season and end up in 12th place because they're tough to play against. A lot of teams say that about Union.
This is like the fourth week in a row you've been selling Union.
I'm on board with Union here. Guarantee that series goes 3 this weekend at Quinnipiac. They'll play Sunday.
Doesn't every series in that league go 3?
No.
This
do they play the 3-game total goal series? That would be a great idea.
Total goals.
And if it's tied after that, then they tack on injury time.
stoppage time.
Then everybody breaks.
Guy comes out with an Etch-a-Sketch, holds it above his head.
Then everybody breaks.
Oh, no Etch-a-Sketch is allowed in Boston, bro.
Everybody. Then everybody.
It took us a second, but oh yeah, we got it.
How about Hungry Hippos?
Hey, any no fun games from the late 80s are allowed in the city of Boston any longer.
What are you guys doing? Playing Uno? Are you nuts? Trivial Pursuit.
Don't leave your operation game out.
Where it's got electronic parts and lights on it. Oi, you put the water bucket in the dude's knee and
take out his spare ribs and
yes, the ribs, they were hard.
Yeah, yes it was.
Operation, good call.
You know, the other thing that we need to talk about, not well, it's kind of college hockey related.
Connect kind Four?
Before, no. Oh. I think we need to talk about Gnip-Gnop.
Oh, yeah. I never played that.
Neither did I. Was the big fight last week in Buffalo.
Old-time hockey.
Well, and, you know, well, BU's Chris Drury got flattened.
Hope
he got concussed. It's college hockey related.
He did get concussed, and I don't know if it was a dirty hit or not. I mean, it looked like Neil's shoulder, Chris Neil, who flattened him, was looked like it might have been a headshot. But of course, Drury was kind of admiring this saucer pass to nowhere.
Yes.
At the same time, so you know, maybe they're both at fault a little bit.
Well, here's where I stand on the hit. Legal, yes. Necessary, no.
Right.
It was unnecessary.
It was unnecessary.
But it's hockey. There are plenty of unnecessary hits in hockey.
Well, the problem is there's not enough necessary hits in hockey.
Yeah. There you go. There's a lot of blame to go around. I mean, Drury shouldn't have been admiring his dump into the corner. Yeah, exactly. But then to make things worse, Brian Murray for Ottawa, the next. I mean, you knew something was going to happen the next shift. Well, then first, and then Drew Stafford.
Hilarious.
Drew Stafford.
Shift.
Well, we should mention that Drew Stafford from North Dakota comes out and defends Drury's honor by trying to take on Neil. And thankfully, it was short because I think he was getting. I mean, I know Stafford's a big kid, but I think Chris Neil probably would have wrecked all them around pretty good.
Yeah. But thankfully, well, you know what though. I think Drew Stafford in Buffalo is going to be a lot like Eric Cole in Carolina. People are going to love him. He's going to produce. He's going to be an impact player. I think that those careers will be very similar.
That's a good observation.
Just saying.
He's an energy guy with some talent.
Yeah, a lot of it. A
lot of talent. But then, and we talked about this at length, because obviously we were buzzing about this fight. Brian Murray. this game's in Buffalo, so the Sabres have the last change. Who does he send out after this whole hit and the skirmish that took place after it? Who does he send out for the next shift? Mike Comrie, Danny Heatley, and Jason
Spezza. Who apparently
Spezza.
Doesn't like the fight.
Yeah, none of them. Yeah.
You've got a bunch of guys there that, as I described it, you've got, 30 teams in the league?
Yeah.
And each team has four lines in the lineup every night? So there's 120 lines of hockey players. And probably the least tough line out of 120 is Comrie Heatley Spezza. I mean, really?
I know. And Brian Murray sends him out for the first shift after a fight.
sends it all on the ice while Lindy is screaming, standing on the boards, yelling at the ref about suspensions, and banging his elbow with his hand. Murray, I don't know, man.
Yeah, that's...
And then the refs are trying to get play started again, so Lindy backs off the bench, and you can see that Briere was out on the ice, and Lindy pulls off Briere and sends out Peters, Mayer, and Coletta, just called up from Roch. Oy.
It was good.
Hilarious.
It was good theater.
Yeah.
And then,
now,
and then the puck drops, and obviously they go after Spezza. Peters is,
and Comrie.
Well, and Peters is
or skating. And Heater. Yeah.
And Peters is skating around. He's trying to get Healy. Healy's trying to skate away from him. You can tell Healy's trying to skate away from him the whole time. And Peters grabs him around Heatley around the face and basically ends up face washing him. I mean,
yeah. Then Emery really escalated everything.
Yeah, you know, how bad is it when the line that you have on the ice gets
the
out?
The goalie has to come out and protect him.
Has to defend their own.
Emery is one of my new favorite players because of that.
Emery is Johnny likes to fight, though. He's been in scraps a lot. He's been in a lot of scraps.
Well, and a lot
at the American League and in the NHL.
I was watching Hockey Night in Canada on Saturday. They were taking Don Cherry took Peters to task for fighting Emery. Yeah, that was a little bit of a goofy deal. You know, goalies. You know, a player shouldn't fight a goalie, but you know, Emery wanted to go. I mean, he wanted.
Oh yeah.
When that whole
yeah.
thing went down, he wanted to.
Those were the two toughest guys on the ice. I mean, really?
Well, it wasn't Henrik Talinder or whoever was out there for the...
Yeah, exactly.
We know it wasn't Comrie or Healy.
Or Spezza.
Or Spezza, for that matter.
Spezza might have been worse than the other two, to be honest with you.
I think you're right. But Drew Stafford, thumbs up.
Yeah, way to work, Drew Stafford.
We like that.
Yeah, they're going to love him. They do like him. They're going to love him.
Yes.
In Buffalo.
Any trades? Yeah. Of interest today?
College hockey trade. Jay Baribault, Minnesota Baribault. Gophers. His rights were removed. He did not get traded to Michigan Tech for a player to be named later.
For Rob Nolan.
Although I heard Tech was dangling some stuff, and they just couldn't close it.
Yeah, it happens on deadline with a cap room.
Yeah.
Minnesota had to stay under the cap.
Tech has plenty of cap room.
Yeah, you got to be careful of where you dangle your stuff. I mean,
oh my,
that is true.
Especially at Michigan Tech.
It's cold.
I thought about this today. You mentioned Jay Baribault. Think for just a second about these five freshman forwards in the WCHA: Baribault, Kyle Oposo from Minnesota, Brock Trotter at Denver. And then Andreas Nodal and Ryan Latch at St. Cloud State. Okay, there's five forwards, probably five of the best, you know, freshman forwards in the country. There are only three spots on the WCHA all rookie team, so two of those guys won't even make the all rookie team. That's some young talent. That's pretty good.
That's good. Enjoy it while it lasts.
Oh yeah, I don't know that. You know, Oposo especially, and Nodal maybe will be back next year.
Nodal drafted?
Yes. He is a Philadelphia Flyer, I believe.
Yes.
And he
is
he
a
could
Flyer.
Walk in and play on their first power play right now.
That's not saying much.
Hockey hero Noah Welch traded also.
That's right.
Hockey hero.
Baribault got traded to the Blues so he can... can join Eric Johnson.
Aha.
More people in St. Louis rooting for the Gophers to make the Frozen Four.
Jamal Myers?
Did not get traded. He was supposed to get traded to Toronto. Did not happen.
Obviously, the best trade deadline coverage came out of TSN, whose studios are located in Toronto. So there was a lot of Leafs talk. And, man, these guys just kill the Leafs up there. It's bad. The Leafs do deserve to get killed a little bit. The anchor especially. I mean, the analysts were pretty fair and safe. The anchor God was hammering them.
Who's the last? Pro-
do we still get anybody? He said they re-get people. They've already had.
They're re-gifters.
So he goes, listen to the guys they've been in the mix for. Gary Roberts, Yannick Perreault. Huh, really? Dave Anderchuk was on the phone this morning. Couldn't work anything out.
I think that's about it for trades, though. It was a pretty slow day for
Kachuk, college. Kachuk, Guerin, Kartz, Smoke?
Well, that all happened. Well, I guess Guerin happened today. Kachuk was
Dominic
Sunday.
Moore coming to Minnesota.
Oh, yeah.
Dom Moore, yeah.
That'll give him over the hump.
ESPN.com had a great line about Dominic Moore saying he's another nameless, faceless forward that will fit into Jacques Lemaire's system of automatons. Boy, that'll put butts in the seats in St. Paul.
Yeah, that's
the
not
Bruins
very...
got another college hockey player. They're doing well.
Bruins what?
Bruins got another college hockey player on their roster.
Yeah, they did. Aaron Ward. I forgot about Aaron Ward.
Wardo.
He was apparently causing some turbulence in the Rangers' room.
There were murmurs that he was not good in the room. Or actually, that the room was not good with him.
Yeah. We should. Yeah, when you consider that who he was not playing nicely with was... Where's number 68? Yeah, you know, you
Hall of Famer Jaromir Jagr.
You gotta wonder who the bad teammate is.
The Rangers have to start playing nice with Tommy Polk. That guy's getting a raw deal over there.
Is he up and scratched, or is he still in the Hartford shuttle?
That's a Johnny Cash song, isn't it?
He's been up and scratched. The last I read about him, they were really screwing him over. They won't send him. Did I miss something?
No.
He's been up and scratched, and they won't send him down because of contract issues or something like that. So he's basically just kind of hanging out, not playing any hockey. And the Rangers' defense has been spectacular all season, so, you know, they really have no needs to address on the blue line. So, you know, he's Tommy Polk, their young defensive player, is just wilting away in the New York City streets.
Maybe they need... That's maybe not a bad place to work, you know, or to not work and get paid.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm in the NHL.
Scott
really?
Clemenson.
Yeah.
Yeah, I played...
The Clemensons in New Jersey.
I play...
Polk's in Manhattan.
No, I know, but I'm just saying. I play 3 games a year, but there's a lot of zeros on my check.
I'm in a show. I guess backup goalies get the most Agnew out there. Can we say Agnew on the podcast? We know. Is that...
What is that?
Is that approved? Wow.
The FCC is coming after us.
Send a note to Mr. Piney over at Pine Bend Elementary. Yeah, just put this one on the no list.
You can't say that, can you?
Why not?
What if?
Wow.
What if my mom was listening?
She's heard the word before.
Well, I mean, probably. She works in high school, but Judas Priest. What was that?
What? What's what?
Somebody. I bet you, what if a priest listens to this?
Kenny, to any of you young ladies listening, just a note about Gladdy. He's single. And I am a backup goalie.
Oh, no.
Wow.
Clearly.
Deterioration.
Oh, jeez. This has gone...
I don't know what... What's the big deal?
So does that mean...
If that was on... A movie that was on ABC, that word would be taken out.
No, it wouldn't.
Yes, it would. I guarantee it.
No, it would not.
Oh, if they showed Caddyshack on ABC, they would take that word out.
They'd bleep it out.
Every word out of
Caddyshack. Companionship or something.
Companionship.
All right, well then, backup goalies have lots of friends.
There you go. All right.
I don't know. Is there really an FCC rule against the internet? Is kind of like the Wild West. I mean,
there's no FCC.
Pretty much anything goes.
Type in these words and see what you come up with. Never mind.
Oh God, I'm pretty sure. Well, I don't know. This whole section might be coming out.
Boss, I've heard you use that word in conversation.
I've slipped it into a story on the website every now and then.
Wow. I'm flabbergasted that you're flabbergasted.
Let's take a vote. Jess, are you flabbergasted?
I was... If I were to measure my level of flabbergastedness, I would put it at about a 7. That was surprising, and I don't know. Yeah.
Rook?
Yeah, I would never use a word like that, especially in public conversation.
Didn't have enough eyes in it.
Jeez.
Wow.
You're freaking Mo Wanchuck over there.
Mo
Here's
Wanchuck.
To the Sunshine State.
Well, it's probably about time for us to head over to the Palm Isle, I think. Because this is...
I think it is.
I never knew Mo's last name. Now I do.
We've surpassed the hour milestone.
Oh, we're well beyond an hour. We're looking at an hour 7.
Depending on how much of this remains in the podcast.
Yeah, I might have to put some tone in there. Why don't you just
you know what? Maybe it's fitting. I'll say this. Like the Chris Neal hit on Drury, legal yes, necessary no. And there's your ultimate segue for the year on the Inside College Hockey Podcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Jess Myers, Mike Idlebiss, and Jeff Howe. I'm Joe Gladyszewski. Signing off. Please keep following College Hockey at InsideCollegeHockey.com.